You're listening to Burst, Bournemouth's internet radio station. Burst Live News.
It's 12 o'clock and I'm Emma Golby-Kirk. Iran's supreme leader has accused the British government of being treacherous. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei addressed thousands of worshippers at Tehran University, the scene of some of the biggest protests against the election result. The supreme leader also denied fraud and described the election outcome as a definitive victory. There are calls for stricter laws to govern the use of sunbeds. Scientists estimate more than 100 deaths from skin cancer every year in Britain are linked to their use. Later on, a government-commissioned report will be published looking into tighter restrictions for tanning salons. Formula One's governing body is standing firm over the decision by 8 teams to break away. Teams including Lewis Hamilton's and Jenson Button's say they're going to form their own championship next year. They can't agree with the FIA on proposals to limit team budgets. A ban on running in the playground, wet grass stopping PE and even compulsory goggles to use blue tack. A survey of teachers has revealed these rules as examples of restrictive health and safety in schools. But Hank Roberts from the Association of Teachers and Lecturers isn't convinced.
I've never been to any school ever where pupils aren't allowed to run in the playground. When they're allowed out in the playground, that's specifically what you expect pupils to do. So I'd be very interested now in any school that's banned pupils from running in the playground. These are urban myths.
In entertainment news, Susan Boyle's pulled out of another concert on the Britain's Got Talent tour after apparently breaking down in tears in Liverpool. Fans were greeted with notices at the venue last night informing them she wouldn't be performing. She's now missed 3 shows and it's unclear if she'll appear in Cardiff tonight. And the weather. In the north of the country today, expect clear spells with some patchy rain in the highlands. Moving further south, there's more cloud around. Along the south coast, it's feeling warmer with light winds, patchy cloud but mostly dry. It's looking similar in the west country as well. I'm Emma Golby-Kirk and I'll have more news for you in an hour.
You're listening to Burst, available online or online.
Well, hello and welcome. This is Third Ear. Firstly, it's the polite thing to do to introduce ourselves. And for the next 2 hours, you will be guided through a variety of features and programmes. Some are funny. Some of them are trying to be funny and we just think they're funny. And some are thought and ear-provoking radio. Emma Golby-Kirk and myself, my name's Marie, will be making sure that you have at least a few good seamless links. And our producers today are Sarah Horsley and Crystal Yang. It's also a good idea to tell you why and what is Third Ear. Now, we came up with the idea after feeling quite limited with just having 2 ears. It's not quite enough. There is so much to listen to in this world and that it would be really handy if we could have an extra ear to make sure that you don't miss anything. So we have created Third Ear and we are dedicated to searching out some of the wonderful things to please your 2 ears. Actually, yesterday in an email, our producer Crystal, I think, described Third Ear really well. She said it tries to open a window to a beautiful, beautiful, small, small world. So for the next hour, our beautiful but small world is going to be tackling some rather large issues. In 10 minutes' time, we're going to be looking at the issue of human trafficking. And if you weren't aware that there was a large issue, I can't stress enough, please do stay with us. We're also going to be looking into this weekend's sporting world. Don't worry, me and Emma are not going to be having much input into that sports section, but we have got our very own correspondent to help us through that. And we're going to be giving you some rather practical but useless student recipes. But firstly,
here on Third Ear, we couldn't ignore the fact that this week is National Refugee Week. So we have decided to join in with all the action and devote the first part of our show to shining a light on the stories of some of the people who find themselves in our country from foreign lands. I went first to a refugee and asylum seeker drop-in centre in Southampton, which each week welcomes more than 100 people through its doors, and I heard the story of one woman's long struggle to be granted leave to remain in Britain.
Initially, when I came here as a visitor. My sister's husband was in hospital ill, so I thought I'd come and visit them and just give her moral support for that time. And while I was here, things turned for the worse in Zimbabwe. My friend was abducted and she disappeared. And my family said to me, it was not advisable for you to come because people had been asking. So I just stayed.
Did you stay on your own or did you have people with you?
At that time, I stayed with my sister. Now I've got my two daughters, and I since have become a grandmother while I was here. But I've got... Am I jumping? I've got family back in Zimbabwe. My son is still in Zimbabwe. Okay. And I don't know when I'll see him again.
And how does that feel?
Very hard. It's very, very hard. It's the hardest thing. Because all his teenage years, I haven't seen him. And he has grown by himself. I mean, he's got family. He's got my family to support him. But as a mother, I feel very sad that I'm not there for him. And I can't do much for him.
Do you hope that he will come over here?
I do hope that when I get my status, that he can join me. But the problem is, he's now 18 years. So there's still complications. When he's 18, he's an adult. They may not allow him to come.
Do you write to him?
Yeah, I do. I do write to him. I phone sometimes. If I find someone who gives me a phone card, then I phone him. I write not as often as I should, but I do keep in touch.
I'm John Meller, and I'm one of the people who is helping to run the Avenue Multicultural Centre. It started in July last year and has gradually built up. We started maybe with 30-35 people coming, and now we have every week on a Friday over 100 people who are coming here.
My name is Viv, and I come into the drop-in centre to be friendly to refugees and asylum seekers. Really, from my point of view, it's about going in and being a friend, a friendly face from the UK to people from all different lands who are usually here with a lot of different and difficult, complex problems.
Initially, I didn't know what to do. I got confused. And then I met one woman. She just saw me. I was just wondering, didn't know what I was doing. So then she showed me to a refugee centre in London, refugee place. And then I went and I talked to them, and they told me that you could apply for refugee status, seek for asylum, which I did in 2002, early May. But that wasn't a successful application. So that was turned down. And then I appealed, and that was also turned down. And now I then put an application for humanitarian rights, because while I was here, my eye condition deteriorated. And while when I went for my appeal, we had asked for an adjournment so that I could get proper professional advice with my sight. But the judge didn't give to that. So we just went on with the appeal, which failed. And I have since lost sight in my left eye. Because of that, so I'm registered, partially sighted now.
I was doing a wonderful job as an equalities officer. And unfortunately, it was maternity leave cover, and it came to an end. So I thought, what do I know about? Well, I'm quite good at investigating cases because I have an academic background, and so nitpicking amongst detail and understanding what the whole issue is about quickly. So I thought, right, well, it would be nice to get an opportunity to meet people who are asylum seekers and refugees. And so I looked them up in the yellow pages in the telephone directory, and that's how I found CLEAR. And I said, here's me, can I help? And initially, they assigned me to act as a mentor with a guy, and then with a woman I'm still in touch with, because we're actually now quite good friends. And she's actually got herself a job, which is really, really great. She's a refugee, and she's got herself a full-time job, which she started on Monday. So I'm really pleased about that. So she's not here today, and so I'm branching out, meeting a few other different people.
Most of the people who come are asylum seekers. Some of them are utterly destitute, and some receive benefits from one source or another. The process for an asylum seeker is that initially they may well get some government grant, and that is organised through local agencies. If they are refused in their claim to have leave to remain, we then find that they become totally destitute.
Yeah, I trained as a nurse from 2003. That's how I came to Southampton. I was coming to train as a nurse 2003 to 2005. I only lost my sight 2006. That's when it's completely, we found that it was not, there was no sight in the left eye. Yeah, so I trained as a nurse. I did a two-year diploma, postgraduate diploma in nursing. And that is because I've got other qualifications. So they exempted me in doing 3 years. So I did train as an adult nurse, which I'm very proud of. I enjoy nursing because it's something that I always wanted to do when I was young, but I couldn't do it then because my father didn't want me to be a nurse. But at least now I'm happy because in my old age, I've done something that I've always wanted to do, and I do hope, I was hoping that when I've done it, I can make use of it. But at the moment, I can't.
And why is that?
Because of my immigration status, I haven't been given status yet. I'm still waiting.
There's a lot of bureaucratic hoops to jump through if you want to get professional work in the medical field in this country and you're medically qualified from overseas.
If you're an asylum seeker, the one thing which you want is to have leave to remain in this country. And therefore they need legal advice, and we have the Refugee Migrant Justice Service, which consists of legal caseworkers, and they provide a free service, and so an asylum seeker will come to us in order to get that legal advice.
Because of my health problems, I applied for humanitarian grounds. Yeah, and then that application is still pending. But I've even since put in another fresh application, because that was also to help. If I had a fresh application, it was also to help me to get support. And now I'm getting support. So at least I've got accommodation and I get vouchers to buy food.
What's quite evident to me is that the refugees and asylum seekers, if they all had bicycles and could ride bicycles, they would be able to have a better life, because getting around would be easier, safer, faster, and less expensive, because sometimes they can't even afford bus fares, so they have to walk to places, which of course takes them a long time and also takes it out on their soles or their shoes.
We don't have welfare in Zimbabwe, so we are not used to handouts. Zimbabwean people are very hardworking, and there are people who would like to work if they are given the opportunity to work. But with the asylum system, they can't work for themselves. So we are reduced to nothing but almost beggars, really.
The most serious problem is that asylum seekers do not have the right to work. They had it until a few years ago, but the Labour government removed it. Unlike many European countries, we stop people from working. So if they get no benefits and they are unable to work, they're destitute.
My hopes for the future here, hopefully if I get my status, I want to continue that business idea that I had, because it was to teach children from Zimbabwe the tradition and the language. So I want to do that. And at the same time, I would like to work as a nurse.
And do you think that will ever happen?
And fulfill my long dream, my long life dream of being a nurse. I think it will happen. I think it will happen. I'm a positive person in that sense. Because I know they do try all sorts of things to say, to bring you down, but I would like to give back, you know. I've trained in this system. I've lived here all these years now, since 2001. That's a long time. And I would just like to work in the community and give back a little of what I got from the community anyway.
Be brave about getting into conversation with people. Be cognizant of when they don't want to converse and shut up. listen very hard and intently. Don't provide them with solutions because you're probably not able to.
It's not easy. But if you are running from prosecution, you there's nothing you can do. You have to just come and state your facts. I mean, the society here, the people here are very helpful, I must say. The organizations here are very supportive for people coming from persecution, fleeing from persecution. So, yeah, it is a place where you can come and get help. But just to say that it doesn't automatically happen. You won't get your status just like that.
One hope I have is that in the future they will be able to work. If that was to happen, then we would have fewer people coming to us. But the present indications are that we will be here next year and probably for several years.
Well, that was produced and written by Emma Golby-Kirk, and with very special thanks to the CLEAR Project. Now, the CLEAR Project has been working in Southampton since 2001 to improve the education, employability and the quality of life for asylum seekers and refugees living in Southampton. If you want more information on the CLEAR Project or perhaps volunteering there, do go to their website. It's clearproject.org.uk. And to find out more about National Refugee Week, who we have teamed up with today, and the events that they'll be running in your area, go to refugee.org.uk. Now we're moving slightly closer to home, and we're joined by James Davis from International Care Network in the studio. Thank you for coming and talking to us today, James. Now you're based in Bournemouth. Can you tell us a bit about what you do?
International Care Network, we've been in Bournemouth for about 10 years now. We started as a friendship organisation for asylum seekers. In those days, 10 years ago, it was mainly Afghans and Albanians who'd been placed into cheap hotels in Bournemouth, and they were very unhappy because nobody was taking much interest in them or caring for them. And a group of people got together, and it grew from there. We moved into housing, into English language provision, into benefits advice, helping people with their asylum claims where we could, and so on. And we've developed on from that. So we've become now very professional in things like immigration advice. We care for a number of underage asylum seekers, that is, under 18s who come on their own and hold up their hand and claim asylum on arrival.
And can I ask you the situation here in Bournemouth? Is there a specific need? We're near the coast, aren't we? Is there something in Bournemouth that perhaps makes it special or different or particular type of care you're having to give down here?
We are distinctive. We're not big in the refugee world because we've never been a what is called a NAS dispersal area. NAS is the National Asylum Support Service, and people who arrive in this country and claim asylum are normally cared for by NAS, and NAS sends them to a number of cities around the country, and Southampton is one of those. But Bournemouth never has been, so there's never been any NAS accommodation here. So the refugee community in Bournemouth is mostly people who were here before the creation of NAS, plus their dependents, plus friends who move here. And then there's a small number of newer refugees who don't need or want NAS support who come here. But it does mean that quite a high proportion of those that we see already have some permission to stay. And so it's the problems of integration. Now then, but we also do see those who are still asylum seekers who are, who haven't got status, who are waiting for decisions or who've had negative decisions and say, well, what do I do now? What can I do? And they come and see us and we give what help we can.
Can I ask you a bit more about that process of integration? What sort of support and skills are you putting over to these people who have been granted asylum?
I suppose the essential things are firstly housing, secondly employment or benefits for those who would never be able to work, and thirdly English. So it's those things. Now we are not an English teaching establishment, but we do know who does, and we point them in those directions. with employment. Again, we're not an employment agency, but we understand the job seekers allowance system, and we know how to point people there, how to help them, how to fill in the forms for them. So it's those kinds of things. And housing, we used to do a lot of ourselves, typically putting people into student-style accommodation. We do less of that now, mainly because the housing need is really the first rung on the ladder. We're not about the second rung. And once people are in work and are established and they've got a future assured, they still have issues, they still have problems, and it may be bringing a wife and children, it may be all kinds of other things. They may fall foul of the law, or just they need advice on this kind of thing. And so they come to us and ask for help, and we give what help we can. Yeah, but we don't do so much housing itself now.
Mm. And may I ask you why, James, you got involved in ICN in this particular line of work?
I heard about it at a time that I was looking for work, and got very excited by it. I started 6 years ago as a volunteer, and after 6 months they started paying my salary, which is very nice of them.
That is very kind. Now, you may be asked this quite a lot, but have you got any specific stories or situations that have really touched you over your time of working here? Because you've been doing this for quite a while, haven't you?
I've been doing it for 6 years, and yes, I mean, every day brings stories. Now, many of them are good news stories. They're stories of hope, of people who are achieving something and have managed to get a job, or managed to learn some English, or managed to get a house and to be paying their own rent in their own way. All of those are good news stories, and we really enjoy those. There are also stories of great injustice, of things that sometimes it's somebody's fault, very often it's nobody's fault, it's or no individual's fault, it's the system that that goes awry and nobody picks up the pieces, because the Home Office has such vast numbers of people to deal with. I think of somebody who was in my office an hour ago, who I think has been waiting longer than anybody else, been waiting over 10 years for a first decision on his asylum claim. And that sort of thing shouldn't happen.
No. And so in this 10-year period, is it just a waiting game? What's this client been doing for 10 years?
Well, because he's been waiting that long, he is allowed to work. There are particular, most asylum seekers without a decision are not allowed to work, but some who've been here a long time are. And for some of that time, he has been working. For some of that time, he's been quite ill and not able to work and been on income support. But most of those routes are not available for newer asylum seekers, but it is for him.
Absolutely. Now, for somebody who perhaps isn't connected to asylum seekers or refugees in any way, how can they help or get involved or become a support network to people like and to companies like ICN?
Well, we do have some volunteers who are working with us, and we'd be very welcome if anyone wanted to approach us offering help in that kind of way. I think a lot of it is knowing what's going on. Many of the press are very antagonistic to asylum seekers. Not all. Some of the press is very positive. Very often we have a kind of split personality, don't we? And we say, there are some who will say, send them all home. But when you realise actually you're talking about the child that sits next to your child in school, the person that drives your taxi or who serves you in a takeaway, then, and it's somebody you know, somebody who's alongside you at the factory, then you sort of say, well, I didn't mean that person. Mm. And it's where you come across individuals, and there is the, of course, very often you haven't gotten the opportunity to make a friendship with your taxi driver, but there are some opportunities where you can, even if it just starts with passing the time of day and asking people what their story is and where they come from originally and what their hopes are. It's friendship, it's acceptance, it's getting to know people as individuals, as real people, rather than as the statistics that they're sometimes portrayed as.
And what would you say to those people who do have that type of view, like, you know, this is our country, we're struggling for jobs as it is, we don't want other people coming in and taking them. What would you say to those people?
Economics is a terribly difficult science, and I know very little about it, but I think it is not true that people who come... I don't think it's true to say that people come and take jobs from other people. Actually, when people come from abroad and work, they actually create work for other people. So actually, the more the economics argument, I don't think, you know, there are arguments about being a crowded island, but the economics argument, I don't think it washes. I think the more people you have working, the more work is generated and creating more opportunities for others.
Absolutely. And where does the future of ICN lie, do you think?
Well, I suppose we're here as long as the refugee community wants us to be here and comes knocking on our door saying, please help me with this or with that or with the other. And as long as that goes on, we're here.
Absolutely. Thank you. Now, can I ask if anyone has been affected by the issues that we've been talking about here? Have you got some contact details you'd like to give out? I know you've got your website. Or where can people go to get more help and perhaps just more information if they know someone who may need help?
Our website is probably the best place, and it's www.icn.org.uk, and our phone numbers and so on are on that website, icn.org.uk.
Thank you so much for coming in today, James. We very much appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. You're listening to Burst, Bournemouth internet radio station.
After 1 o'clock this afternoon on Third Ear, we're going to be looking at communicating, from what it's like being in a new place where communicating becomes survival to when words aren't needed at all. As a taster of things to come after one, and to encourage you to use your third ear, one side of the story looks at how the rise of the mobile phone saw the death of the phone box. But there are two people who won't give in to new technology and keep visiting the big red booth on the corner of St. Valerie Road and Arthur Close near Meyrick Park. Here are some snippets of their stories. See if you can make your own.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, yeah.
Listen.
Yeah, it's me.
Hello? Oh, hi.
Are you listening?
Yeah. You?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, no, why?
Okay.
Just listen. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, it's great, isn't it? Why?
No, I haven't seen it for ages.
I thought it was a joke.
Oh, man.
No, it was so good.
Well.
So good.
40-inch with...
Yeah, things just worked out so well. It was great.
Oh, no mushrooms.
Yeah.
But that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah.
You haven't done
anything. Exactly.
Off? Yeah.
Said,
just tell him.
Well, that's
just
all
tell
I'm,
him.
That's all I was really
hello?
Saying in the beginning.
Oh,
I missed it.
Gone.
Why does
and
it have to
maybe...
be so complicated?
No,
I just
make
want
it
you to consider it, really. That's all.
Okay, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm parched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine.
Delivery free.
Tell him.
I told you that would happen. That's exactly
what
I
should tell him.
Yeah. All right.
Why not?
It is funny, though, isn't it? Oh, come on. Don't be ridiculous. No, honestly, do
exactly what it is.
No, I really like that. I really like that. Thank you so much. I'm really happy.
You've got to be joking me.
No, don't worry about it. That's fine. Okay, just wait here 1 second. I'll be back in a second. Okay, I'm back.
Yeah, that's actually quite good. Hang on, just 1 minute. Just 1 minute.
That'd be great. Oh... All I'm asking you to do is think about it.
No problem, just tell me when.
Just
goodbye. Excuse me.
Just think about
bye.
It. Okay,
see
yeah,
ya.
Fantastic.
Bye-bye.
See you soon.
Bye.
And that was produced and written by Marie Horner, with special thanks to Daniel Curtis.
Now, as we've just been hearing, that there is support out there for people who are looking for asylum and also refugees. Heard the story of Evelyn and, of course, the valuable work that ICN are doing as well. Now, some basic human right is, of course, freedom. This is something that everybody has or should have. However, there are some cases where this has been taken away. People who are trafficked across Europe and across the world, every year 800,000 people are living in slavery. Now, we've been excuse me. We teamed up with Bournemouth University, the student union here, and the Soroptimists of Poole to put together a feature and to raise awareness in the university about the issue of human trafficking and to try and raise awareness across the university campus. I'm here today with the Stop the Trafficking, Stop the Tears Purple Teardrop campaign. It's a joint effort between the Soroptimists International of Poole and the Students' Union here at Bournemouth University. The aim of today is to raise awareness of human trafficking. There are many things you can do to make sure it stops. And the first thing to do is to learn about the realities of what's happening.
I was promised a better life.
Far away from my home.
I used to have a family.
Now, I must pay for my family's debts.
I sleep with many men every day. They make me
kill
for a war.
Work many long hours.
Trapped,
beaten,
scared,
locked in the dark.
With no way out.
I want to go home.
I want my
freedom.
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 I have never really heard anything. It's not very publicised. I would say it's not very publicised. I'm sure it probably goes on in the local area, but I'm not aware of anything. I haven't heard anything around my area or anything.
No, I haven't noticed at all. So quite a surprise seeing it here at university. Because I haven't known this, and now seeing that these things are happening around me, I'd obviously want to know more about it and where it's happening.
I'm the next step, waiting in the wings.
Sadly, there are thousands who are trapped in various forms of enslavement here in our country. Oftentimes, young women who are caught up in prostitution. So we've got to give prosecutors the tools to crack down on these human trafficking networks. Internationally, we've got to speak out, and we've got to forge alliances with other countries to share intelligence, to roll up the financing networks that are involved in them. It is a debasement of our common humanity.
Because the Soroptimists have become very aware of the issue of women and children who are trafficked all over the world, but particularly into the United Kingdom. It is arguably the most lucrative of all the criminal activities. We want to raise awareness with men that going with a trafficked woman isn't the same as going with a prostitute, that trafficked women are there against their will, they don't receive the money that that is being charged. They're very often severely beaten and abused. And of course, if you have sex with a woman against her will, then that's rape. And so in our country, gangs are setting up for men to unintentionally be raping women and getting the money from it. And that's just a situation that when you understand about it, you can't ignore. You have to do something about it.
Can't place your faith in any one thing except people. You know, it's only people who change the world. Make no mistake about it, it's not government, it's large groups of people getting together and saying this needs to happen now. This particular mission about sex trafficking, many people can help. They can talk about it, and in particular in places where there isn't a great deal of information about it. And we need a lot more information out there so that women know what they're getting into.
Every day, decisions we make, like buying fair trade chocolate, finding out where our clothes come from, or being aware of the people around us can change the life of someone trapped in slavery. To find out more, take action, or get involved, go to soroptimist-gbi.co.uk/pool, stopthetraffic.org, and theseednetwork.co.uk. Thank you.
Well, that's powerful stuff. Now, Marie, you've been heavily involved in supporting people who have been trafficked into this country. The stories in the feature, are they real stories?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they are very much real stories. I mean, names have been changed in some cases, but they are absolutely, because that's where our passion and where our drive for people who work in this industry come from, is helping people. So we need to hear the truth of what's going on.
Okay, and the Soroptimists that were mentioned there, who are they and how are they involved?
Well, we decided to, along with the Students' Union, we decided to do this day, and the Soroptimists of Poole, the Soroptimists itself is actually an international and national company or organisation, and the Soroptimists are women, specifically women who are businesswomen or perhaps professionals in some kind. There are teachers and doctors as well, who are perhaps retired or coming to the end of their career and feel they want to do something for humanity. And they've been running a Purple Teardrop campaign, which is their campaign title for raising awareness of human trafficking here in the UK, especially over in Poole, which is the group of Soroptimists that we worked with, because Poole is a port, as we know. And actually, the interesting thing about Poole is it's an industrial port. And so though we may not see it as a massive holiday port in terms of when we go to France or we think of Dover and going over to Calais, perhaps Southampton even, but because it is an industrial port, Poole is actually a very popular place for trafficked people to be brought into because of the lack of security, the border control. The Borders Agency is now tagged on to that and they realise that, but they are going to be stepping up and looking at more improving the security around Poole because of course the 2012 Olympics that are coming to Weymouth, the sailing events and the Paralympic events that are going to be held there. So Poole is very much becoming a hotspot in an awful way for trafficked women and boys and men and girls to be brought in. So that's why we worked with the Soroptimists of Poole. They're an amazing group and have been very supportive.
Okay, and where do people mainly come from? Which countries?
In Europe, the source country, the main source country, which is what we term it as, is Moldova. Now, the reasons around this are Moldova is an ex-Soviet company, it's just a country, it's just coming out of control of the Soviet Union. So its economy is very poor and very much looking to improve itself. It's Moldova itself is desperate to get into the EU at the moment. So as the government is working hard at improving its economy. 80% of Moldovans live in poverty. So there's some big issues involved there. And interestingly enough, the Moldovan girls have a very distinctive look, which is very attractive to European men, which is dark hair and very light skin. And they are mainly trafficked into the Ukraine, into Greece and into Turkey. But Moldova is very much seen with the people I've spoken to out of Moldova who are doing work at trying to recover sex trafficked women out there. They say that Moldova is the machine driving the human trafficking situation here in Europe.
Okay, and what is your charity actually doing? As well as raising awareness, what else are you doing to help?
Well, absolutely. It's really, in fact, only last night we've officially become a charity and have signed off all the paperwork, so I can tell you about it now. Our charity is called Cross Border Initiatives, and it's run by myself and my other half, Steve, and our very good friend, Gaz. And what we're doing, the three of us, the reason that we started it was for a number of reasons. One of them is I actually work as a outreach worker in brothels across Bournemouth and Poole, and I basically go in. There's a team of us, four girls that go in regularly and talk to the women who work there as prostitutes. We have no dealing with clients. And so I have a very strong heart and sort of conviction to be working with these women that are working in the sex industry. And out of that, we've started to notice that some trafficking issues were coming into Poole and some women and girls were being brought here. So that's where I came from it. And we set up this charity after recognising that Moldova was very much at the heart of this. This sounds like an awful kind of business terminology, but the supply of people into Europe. So we've decided to set up a quarterly magazine with the title Cross-Border Initiatives that we are going to produce in Moldova with the support and help from some Moldovan outreach workers there who are working with recovering sex trafficked women. And they are going to produce it in Russian so it can also be used in Romania and Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be sent into schools and youth groups and into the rural areas as well, which are very heavily targeted by traffickers, to get these younger girls and younger boys as well, of course, to read this literature. It's going to be very much kind of pop culture, similar to sort of a music magazine. Their media industry out there is shocking. It's very much behind ours. And it's going to be raising awareness about the issues of trafficking, but also just about life, about health issues and being a teenager and how difficult that is, and get some fresh media in there. I obviously work in radio, so we're going to hopefully be doing some podcasting as well. But we're hoping to get our first edition out by October. But translating from English into Russian is proving to be much, much more of a laborious task than we'd hoped to. But it's going to be fantastic. We'll go out to Moldova later on this summer, see what else we can do to support the people out there.
Marie, that sounds absolutely brilliant. Now, I understand you've made another feature.
Yeah, I wanted to make another feature. Just as I wanted to show you and to signal about the reasons why I got into this kind of line of work, because it is a weird environment to be in a brothel. It is a weird environment and a harrowing situation that these people are in. And I wanted to create a feature that really described the story that I heard and the person that we're about to hear from, Erica. Why I decided to get into this line of work and why it's so important to me and to cross-border initiatives as a whole. So this is Erica and Psalm 22, the reason why I am working in this crazy environment.
Hello? Can anyone hear me? Hello? Look, if anyone's there, please, you have to listen to me. I don't have much time. Please, it's Erica. Tell my mother I've called. Please. Tell her I'm alive. Please. At least tell her that I didn't know. $800,000 adults and children are trafficked across international borders every year. Sex trafficking victims are often sold and resold every 2 months as commodities. Victims are forced to have sex with clients between 8 and 15 times a day, and in some cases, girls have told stories of servicing 40 men a day. Sex trafficked women are often forced into abortions and frequently miscarriage. Some victims are maimed or murdered to send a clear message to other sex workers that they no longer have rights. They're owned by their trafficker or their pimp. Raiders once stormed a brothel where they knew children were being made to work as prostitutes. In a blood and urine-stained room, they found an 11-year-old girl whose fingertips were raw. She's been made to service up to 10 men a day. During her breaks, she had been scratching Psalm 22 on the wall of her cell. My God, why have you abandoned me? Why are you so far away when I groan for help? Every day I call to you, my God, you do not answer. Every night you hear my voice, but I find no relief. Do not stay so far from me, the trouble is near, and no one else can help me. My enemies surround me like a herd of bulls. Like lions, they open their jaws against me, roaring and tearing into their prey. My life is poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax, melting within me. My strength has dried up like sun-baked clay. My tongue sticks to the roof of my mouth. You've laid me in the dust and left me for dead. My enemies surround me like a pack of dogs. An evil gang closes in on me. They have pierced my hands and feet. I can count all my bones. My enemies stare at me and gloat. They divide my garments amongst themselves and throw dice for my clothing. Oh Lord, do not stay far away. You are my strength. Come quickly to my aid. Save me from the sword. Spare my precious life from these dogs.
And that was produced by Marie Horner here, and with special thanks to Hannah Frivold. Now, Marie, I understand that the little girl in that feature has actually now been liberated.
Yeah, absolutely. It happens over 6 months ago, and I met the raider that actually freed that little girl in India, and he said that she's doing much better. It's going to be a long process, but the whole point is that this issue is becoming more prevalent in people's minds. In the previous trafficking feature, we had Barack Obama and Emma Thompson. They're both very key figures backing this issue of human trafficking, which is a global issue. So this is becoming a really large issue in people's minds. People are starting to recognise that this situation needs to be rectified. And yes, this little girl is on the mend, and she's not quite going to school yet, but we hear that that's her next plan. So yeah, it's amazing. And at 11 years old, she's beautiful as well. She's such a beautiful little girl, and she's starting to sparkle a bit more, so that's brilliant. Yeah,
absolutely brilliant to hear. It's good to hear a positive story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's worth also mentioning, you know, there's many people out there who are dealing with this issue. I mean, one of some of the main charities that people want to do find out more, I would suggest you get in touch with using a search engine, not any specific one, but Stop the Traffic is a very good charity that's going on as well. Of course, my charity as well, Cross Border Initiatives and Seed Network. And do look for the Sir Optimists of Paul. Their Purple Teardrop campaign is definitely worth looking up on as well.
Okay.
Well, after...
We're now going to go to Sarah with the sporting news. Is that right, Sarah?
She's here. That was my fault.
She was working so hard on the desk.
Yes, that was my fault. Sorry, I was not meaning to sound egotistical, but hoping for a bit more of an introduction there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on. Let's do it again. It is a very big week in sport, so we have made a special space in our third year programme to talk to Sarah. Sarah!
Hello.
Talk to us.
Thank you.
Is that better?
Yes. I say, although after listening to that you produced there, Marie, I have to say the sport does seem totally insignificant.
No, don't think it's insignificant. Sport is a good relief. It's a good thing to get involved in and to enjoy, to get a bit of release. Not all the world is awful. Please don't start
thinking that. Right. Okay. So, it is a very big sporting weekend coming up this weekend. The main feature that we were going to focus on was the British Grand Prix, which is taking place for the final time ever at, possibly ever, but we'll get on to more of that in a second, at Silverstone. It's going to be at Donington Park from next year. I say it could possibly be the last one at Silverstone because last night it was dominated by the news that the FOTA teams, the eight teams of the Formula One Teams Association, declared that they were not going to participate in the 2010 Formula One season. They are going to break away and start up their own rival championship. The threat has been on the cards for a long time. But last night they did actually say that they are now going to commence preparation for a new championship. So it's something that has split the sport there right down the middle. The eight teams are the championship leader Braun GP, Ferrari, McLaren, Renault, Toyota, BMW Sauber, and the two Red Bull teams, Red Bull Racing and Toro Rosso. And basically they have split away because they disagree with the proposed £40 million budget cap that the FIA, who are the governing body of Formula One, wanted to impose on the teams. So it's kind of overshadowing the race at Silverstone, and it's a very interesting development. Tellingly, there are currently no statements on the official Formula One website or on any of the team's websites. I imagine they'll all come out in due course once they've finished practice for the race at Silverstone this afternoon. In terms of the race, I think everyone's looking for a British winner. Of course, 12 months ago, we had Lewis Hamilton cruise to victory in what was a very, very wet race at Silverstone. It looks like it's going to be dry on Sunday, but we're all hoping for a British winner in current World Championship leader Jenson Button, who is having an absolutely amazing season in the Braun car. Didn't think that he'd have a Formula One seat in January, but he's now racing and currently leading the world championship with Braun GP. So that's the Formula One at Silverstone. Also this weekend, we've got the first test between the Lions, the English and British and Irish Lions, in they are in South Africa. They kick off at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Of course, South Africa are the current world champions, and the Lions will be looking to put in a better performance than they did against South Africa, New Zealand 2 years ago, when they were well and truly hammered down under. So that's also something to look forward to. The squad yet to be announced. We may bring you news of that at the 1 o'clock news. Also, we have the final of the World 2020 Championship in the cricket, which surprisingly South Africa went out last night. I was actually going to have a punt on them to win, but Pakistan beat them. So it's a good job I didn't actually put any money on. Emma's just saying serves you right for thinking about gambling there at me. But yeah, I was because South Africa until yesterday were unbeaten in the series and looked very, very good. They made complete mugs of England when they played England. And yeah, South Africa were my tip to win. So I was hoping that they were going to win, but they got soundly beaten by Pakistan yesterday.
Oh, Sarah, you're talking double dutch to me, but I'm really sorry about that.
Well, I didn't put any money on, so I didn't lose. But yeah, they were going to be my bet to win the whole tournament. There is the second semi-final today, which annoyingly the computer will not find for me. It's running slow. Also, it's the women's 2020, and we're currently playing Australia in the women's 2020.
Wow, fantastic. Are we still on cricket?
We're still on cricket,
right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, with that. And, of course, it is Wimbledon from Monday.
Oh, yeah.
You must know about Wimbledon.
Well, I make a date to go out when it's Wimbledon. I'm not interested at all, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, but you can't, you know, you've got to sit there with your strawberries and cream and your Pimm's.
Yeah, well, I like the strawberries and cream, I have to say, and I'm happy to partake in the Pimm's. It's just actually the tennis that leaves me cold. But
the tennis, yes.
Yeah, I gather you're keen then, Sarah, yeah?
I've grown to like Wimbledon much more than I used to, due to the fact that I had to work there 1 year, so I was kind of forced to like it.
Okay, what did you do?
I was doing security.
Wow, fantastic. Did you kick anybody out?
Yes, we did kick a few people out. I had to kind of search members of the public as they were going into the grounds.
And what did you find then? Why did you kick them out?
lots of knives, amazingly. Some pepper spray, which is illegal in this country but isn't illegal in other countries. So that's a reason why. And just lots of other random things that were, yeah, that we were searching for.
Okay.
That was fun. And Andy Murray, who we're all getting behind and hoping to win because he's British.
Well, I'll support that. I'll back that. Hear, hear for Andy.
He's been seeded third and will face world number 76, Robert Kendrick, okay, in the first round. Rafael Nadal is making an announcement this afternoon as to whether he will defend his title or not. Mm-hmm. If he pulls out, it will give Murray a much better chance at winning Wimbledon.
Okay.
But I'm not holding out that much hope.
I've got everything crossed on that then.
We have got everything crossed for him. Now, in celebration of the sporting weekend, here at the Third Ear, we did put together a little montage to kind of ease you in to that sporting feeling.
Damon Hill wins the British Grand Prix.
And here comes David Coulthard.
Lewis Hamilton.
Union Jacks are really waving now.
This is Silverstone.
Jenson Button, the Button Van Ryan rolls into Silverstone, with Jenson Button winning 6 out of 7 races, and that championship is getting of an era.
What a great shot. Martin Guptill's quite enjoying himself here. Was it in the air? Broken. Knocked him over. What an over this is turning out to be. Is Mendes winning Sri Lanka a semi-final spot here? It's in the air. Should be out as well. Straight down the field to his stroke. And it is taken.
So going back to Wimbledon, did you meet any famous people when you were working there?
I did, because although I was on the public gate for most of the 2 weeks, on the final day, I got moved to another gate, which did deal with a few celebrities. And this man walked up to me and said, excuse me, can you tell me where, I can't remember what it was, but it was one of the posh clubs.
Uh-huh.
Where the posh club is, the Bench Lounge or something, I can't remember.
Good. That sounds good. Yeah. We'll go for that.
Can you tell me where this is? And I stood there, I turned around to the two other people I was with, kind of hoping for a bit of backup, because I couldn't remember for the life of me. And then it suddenly clicked, I remember where it was. It was underneath court number one. So I directed, and it was halfway through my answer to him that I realised it was Robert Lindsay that I was talking to.
Ooh.
It just kind of clicked. Obviously, we weren't allowed to really react to the celebrities.
Was he handsome?
Not really.
Oh. I think he's handsome. Is he not as handsome as he is on telly then?
Yeah, but he's not my kind of guy.
Oh, okay. What's your kind of guy then? We're going off. Is it a sporty type?
No, not really a sporty type.
Is it Moyles?
No. No. I like the fact this is now turned into a personal interrogation of my types. Back to Wimbledon.
Okay.
But my friend did, he actually worked by Centre Court, was actually on one of the really VIP lounges. So he was actually able to meet a lot of celebrities. He met, I think, Venus Williams' dad, loads of like celebrities. And of course, though, you're not allowed to let on that, you know, they're celebrities. You've got to treat them normally like everyone else.
So who's the nicest tennis player then?
They were all pretty nice from what I hear. Mr. Roddick forgot his pass. Now you have to have an electronic scan pass in and out of Wimbledon at all times. He forgot his pass and was going to the poor guy on the gate. Don't you know who I am? Isn't it obvious that I'm, you know, the world number three tennis player?
But the man on the gate was obviously me then.
Yeah, it was. Sorry, Mr. Roddick, you haven't got a pass. You're not allowed in.
Yeah, quite right.
So, you know, there's nothing, you know, that we could really do about it.
Okay, all right. Are you going to tell us what's happening then in the next hour, Sarah?
Yep, coming up in the next hour of the third ear from 1 p.m, we're going to be talking communication. I suppose that seems an apt adjective to say about that. We've got some brilliant pieces from Crystal coming up about what it's like to be a foreigner and speak English as a foreign language in this country and how you have to learn and get by on English to survive. We're also going to be coming up with some pointless student cooking recipes and also seeing whether I can cook a toad in the hole without consulting a recipe book. So stay tuned for that. And also, the real thing that you really should stay tuned for is I've been told by the others that they're going to do something absolutely horrible to me in the last 10 minutes of the programme. So stay tuned to that, because they're going to put me through some torture, I've heard. They've not told me what yet, but they're going to really do something horrible to me, which I'm not looking forward to. In fact, I might run before that that time comes round. So that's really worth tuning into. But because it is 1 o'clock, we are now going to go over to Emma for the Burst News.
You're listening to Burst, Bournemouth's internet radio station. Burst Live News.
It's 1 o'clock and I'm Emma Golby-Kirk. Chants of death to the UK have been shouted during a speech by Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Khamenei. He's addressed thousands at Tehran University, denying fraud in the country's presidential election and describing the outcome as a definitive victory. President Ahmadinejad was re-elected on a landslide. There could be calls for stricter laws to govern the use of sunbeds in a report published this morning. 100 deaths a year from skin cancer are thought to be linked to their use. There have been cases of young girls suffering severe burns at self-service tanning salons.
We know that using a sunbed, and particularly when you're younger, but using a sunbed at any age can increase the risk of melanoma, which is the most serious kind of skin cancer. And we know that in people younger than 35, using a sunbed can increase the risk of melanoma by up to 75%.
That was Jessica Harris from Cancer Research UK. Jenson Button and Lewis Hamilton are on course to defect from Formula One. Brawn and McLaren are among 8 teams who say they'll quit in a row over money and launch a breakaway championship. As things stand, it'll wipe out more than half of the championship lineup. An American woman's been ordered to pay nearly $2 million in damages for illegally downloading 24 songs. Single mother Jamie Thomas-Rassett, who's from Minnesota, was sued by 6 record companies for violating copyright. In entertainment news, Susan Boyle's pulled out of another concert on the Britain's Got Talent tour for apparently breaking down in tears in Liverpool. She's now missed 3 shows and we still don't know if she'll appear in Cardiff tonight. England football captain John Terry's been voted Dad of the Year. The father of 3-year-old twins beat last year's winner Peter Andre into second place. And the weather. Up in Scotland, there are strong winds, but mostly staying dry. Moving into the Midlands, there are some showers expected this evening. In the south and the west country, it's feeling warmer with light winds and occasional light rain, but mostly dry. That's the latest. I'm Emma Golby-Kirk.
You're listening to Burst, available online or online.
Well, we're now going into the communication hour here on the Third Ear. Now, communication isn't just about listening, though we are very good at that here at Third Ear, making sure you're getting some fantastic features and programmes. But it's also about speaking and, of course, body language. And, of course, it's very, very different as you go through different cultures, different religions and, of course, different ethnicities. Over the next half hour, you're going to have a chance to meet with some people from India and Thailand. But before all of that, let's do something that I'm very much looking forward to. Let's sit quietly and get into Crystal's ears to find out what English sounds like to non-native speakers.
When the first time I got on the plane for UK, I didn't realise that globalisation means people of different colours are reading in the same classroom, living under the same roof, and speaking in the same language, but never sounds like the same. In the following time, I'd like to invite you to be in my shoes and to sit in my ears to hear what I hear every day as a foreigner. I guess every international student has some misunderstood situations due to language or cultural differences. Yet more often, we're in the midst of thousands of dialects and accents. When I said mist, I mean, for example, listen.
Now, Mr. Murray, do you realise that if you switched to Amarada, you'd save up to 18% off your gas bill?
Yeah.
Okay. Imagine it's an everyday conversation. It can sound to me like this.
For a fixed term option where gas prices are held until the year 2001.
That's right, yeah.
Sometimes it's like this.
And that you can choose a loyalty plan, which gives you an additional discount every year?
Yeah.
It can also be like this.
Then do you mind me asking why you haven't changed to Amarada Gas?
Yeah, I'm actually a stoat trapped in a man's body.
And if it comes to comedy show or phone call, it's even harder.
Boost to you, the public out there. And first on the line, we have a Mr. Gary Whitcomb. So, Mr. Whitcomb, what's your problem?
Well, Vic,
for no apparent reason, like, I've got a herd of about 63 buffalo in
63?
Aye, that many, and I can't get in there to pick me radishes out, you know? Well, like, I've tried the salt, which has always been good with the slugs and that, but it's had no effect with the buffalo themselves.
None at all?
Not at all.
Surprising.
I've tried, like, getting it thinner or thicker or throwing it at the buffalo.
All I can hear from the caller is several buffalo. But what is a buffalo?
Well, there's absolutely nothing I can do.
Oh, okay. Don't worry. Now, here's the most challenging listening test. Group discussion. This is the chat of my classmates before our class began.
They do fetch grass at funerals in Germany.
Do they? We don't really do it here. You don't have like
funeral with the
really
don't do it.
Quite interesting. But after 30 seconds, I began my daydreaming. That's the moment I felt that I flied above the ground and heard this. Then suddenly, I realise I'm still in the group talking.
In Germany, they take photographs of the coffin and everything, and people.
Now, dear listeners, if you still can't figure out what I mean, try this.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Tu t'appelles comment?
Jonathan Rignoux.
Bringen Sie die bitte zur Bibliothek.
Zur Bibliothek.
Quaglia male.
Mi piace vederlo.
Mas tarde.
Rechts. Et tes parents, comment ça
geradeaus. A che ora? Links. Di treppe.
Mi piace vederlo.
Welcome back. Wiki tells us communication is the process of transferring information from one source to another. Therefore, it's natural if we drop something when transfer, isn't it? In the pursuing of effective communication, I will never surrender.
Welcome back from Crystal's Ears. You're listening to Burst Live, and now we're going to an interview with an Indian student called Fawaz Khan. And Fawaz is the administrator of Bournemouth International Students Facebook group and a famous party organiser known by nearly every international student here. Wow, what an accolade. Here's Fawaz.
Fawaz.
Fawaz, yes.
Fawaz.
There you go. I'm from India, but I'm settled in Bahrain. I did my schooling in Bahrain.
Where is it?
It's near Qatar and Saudi Arabia. So after that, I did my graduation in India. I did my bachelor's in tourism. 3 years after that, I worked for Air France. Then I thought, okay, I should do my master's in Bournemouth Uni as well, for tourism is best over here. So I moved on here.
Do you regard yourself a good student?
No. No, I'm an average student. I'm okay.
But you're really a good organizer for activities.
I love events.
Let's talk about your enthusiasm put in your group.
I have 247 members as far as now. So
whoa-ho.
Yes, I'm still increasing. I try to target all the different schools, but media school is very hard to come because I'm always busy with something or other.
When did you start to do these things?
November or December?
November.
Yeah,
so looking
last
back,
2008, yes.
Which is your most unforgettable one?
Yes, the last one. It's basically more of international. For the first time, I bought very, very different kind of music. Really fun.
Where can you get those different music?
I collect the music. Even the DJ who's playing it as well, he also collects the music. But most of the music is from my side. I came up with the idea last month. thinking that why not I introduce something related to only not only international students, even British students,
mm-hmm.
who can just come and experience what is the international music all about, you know.
How many people went to the last one, the party?
About 150.
Wow. Yes. Is that like even you are in the party with people from different countries, they tend to sit in a table and how can you encourage people to talk?
I can see that many of us, like, we tend to be with our own people. In my parties, I try to introduce, try to bring in some people. It's very hard, but it's a small place and I know everyone, most of them. So I can see, like, in the beginning of the party, people will be like, okay, the Thai people will be in one side, and I can find the other group in this side. After the, like, around 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock, when the party gets over, everyone be mixed. So that is what I like to see.
What do you think this time and effort that you offered gave to you, like what you received?
People should say that they're happy. I just want to hear people saying that they're happy, they enjoyed a good time. I'm going to miss everyone by September. Until September, what all I can do for the international students, I'm trying to do it.
Then what about you? Are you leaving?
I have no idea.
You have no idea?
I want to work here. It all depends.
Then after you graduate, who will take care of this?
I have Facebook? To hand over to someone, someone who's very active, who knows people. Very few people make like this effort in meeting new people and trying to bring all these people. So I will give this once I entirely finish from here.
You know, there are other groups who are targeting at those international students, MyBUISA.
Yes.
What is the difference between these two groups?
ISA is a good community as well. It's run by a lot of people. But I do it individually. That is a different. I don't have a team behind me while doing it. ISA mostly organize trips.
Mm-hmm.
I don't organize trips until now. I have not organized, but I really want to organize one. But I really want to organize a trip which is far off from here. Please know that everyone is friendly over here, especially Crystal.
I agree.
East or West, Biarritz is the best. Based, how you say that? B-I-R-S-T. Oh my god.
Bournemouth Internet Radio Station. Bournemouth International Radio Station.
Now we're transporting you to the exotic destination of Thailand.
My name is Anisha Chaweng Chin Wong. My nickname is On. Just call me On. I'm from Thailand. สวัสดีค่ะ. And I studied International Marketing Management last year. Actually, I enjoy living here. I like living in UK. I never get homesick. I think we have the same culture. It's so quite strict and conservative culture. We can't do lots of things. Like here, we can't dress so open or reveal your body too much. When we first came to UK, when was October 2007. I got IELTS 5.5 and I have to study for 10 weeks to get a slight preparatory program to get into the university. Yeah, so I just studied for 10 weeks and then went back to Thailand for extending visa for the master degree, and then came back since the 1st of February 2008 till now. Didn't go back yet.
It's important and necessary for Thai people to have master degree because you get better paid for your salary and better position in the company. If I come later than this, last year, I'll be too old and lazy and I don't want to study anymore, so I just came last year.
I got one older sister and younger brother. My brother is the only boy. A lovable of my father because he's the only boy. And Chinese people, they really want a boy, something. Yeah, most of Thai people, we have Chinese blood. Yeah, it's like half our grandparents are from China.
I think the best thing is friends. Yeah, I got lots of best friends, especially my friends from accommodation.
My host mother, she loves elephants. She has elephants everywhere.
Oh.
It's the animal that our king in the past, like, he ride on the elephant and fight.
I like watching movies. Thriller, horror movie, scary one. I like it. I like to be frightened all the time. I like to think, follow the movie. I like to guess what's gonna happen. I'm scared, but I like to watch it.
And he said, what should I do without you?
And Ong has now gone back to Thailand to work, so we wish her the very best of luck. Right now, one of our third ear team members, Crystal from China, is going to be sitting behind the microphone, and she's ready to tell her story of living in the UK.
Crystal, are you sure you're living on September? Franca asked me today. Yeah, pretty sure, I said. My host mother continued, can you tell me the exact date you're leaving? Because we just got a query from a student who's planning to move in on September. Well, so the next thing for me is to circle out a date on my calendar to leave. Only 9 months ago, I was the someone to move in, trying to figure out what is what and where is where, as an international student. By the way, I'm Crystal. Crystal Zhang from China. The most asked question I've got here is, why do you have an English name? The truth is, my high school English teacher gave this English name to me. You know, it sounded cool to me, like I got some English identity. Another reason is, my Chinese name is Ming, which sounds like Ming. I just dare to use it. The second most asked question is, are you free in China? Well, I'm free enough to come to UK, but it is true that sometimes we just couldn't log on YouTube. Thanks to the Great Firewall. Don't worry, we can listen to birds in China. So, to some of our Chinese listeners, good afternoon. 大家下午好. Unlike many people, I like rains, so the weather here is not a problem. If it's raining, I'm not dry. If I'm not dry, I'm squeezable. I like cats. I myself must be a cat 100 years ago. For most times, I know what I want, and I know that I came to UK to challenge as well as to indulge myself. I came here to know more about Britain, about myself, about China. Yes, about China. I began to reveal and appreciate many things I took for granted. Traditions, Chinese art and culture, and vegetables. I like cooking, and I miss all the vegetables in China. They're always slightly different than their UK sisters and brothers. We don't have these various sizes of tomatoes and potatoes. We don't sell veggies in flour pot. Oh, and the seafood. No one can tell me where I can get some fresh fish in the city by the sea. Apart from cooking, I indulge myself when spending time on subjects both I long for and I never thought about. Museum, concert, traveling, music lessons, drawing lessons, and above all, radio. By learning it, I got my third ear to this world. It's the way of life, finding stories and telling it to audiences. As one of the mobs and bursts, I had a wonderful journey with everyone here. One of the biggest hobby I developed here is searching in charity shops. We don't have charity shops in China. Every time I went into a charity shop, I can always find something very interesting. Each item on the shelf has a story and tells something about its owner. There are several times I even saw chopsticks or Chinese traditional costumes. After 9 months, I realized that despite different colors and languages, human being is human being. We all have our good side, a naughty side. Despite different time zones, a place to live is always a place to earn and purchase, to lose and gain, to cry and laugh. It is the attitude towards life that makes the difference. One day, the 9-year-old girl of our family asked me in the kitchen, "Crystal, is China nice?" I stopped chopping my vegetables and tried to put an answer to this extraordinary question. "Well, is your home nice?" I asked back. China became my home since I came to UK. Before that, home was somewhere Mom and Dad lived. I'd love to travel as a traveller instead of living as a traveller. And I know it's time to go home.
Burst Live at burst.co.uk.
Wow, I feel like we've learnt a lot more about Crystal in that last 5 minutes. Crystal, are you still with us on your mic in the gallery?
Weather.
Are you with us? Are you here?
Yes,
we can hear you. You can hear us.
Hello.
No YouTube in China. How do you cope?
No, we can't. Just do as 10 years ago. No, it's because sometimes there are some negative news on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Against our country or something, so the government just wipe it out for a while.
Okay.
And then we can get it later, like 10 days later.
Oh, I see. So you have a delay on the news. Okay.
Not delay, but that period.
On that bit is cut out.
Yeah.
So in China, do you learn much about the international scene? Do you find out much about what's going on in the rest of the world?
Yes. I think we are quite, because I might find that developed countries like Britain or America, they are more care about their stuff. But like us, it's just my feelings that we care about what developing countries do. A developed country, sorry, like your these big countries, and then we watch worldwide news every day, like my family members, yeah.
So what made you come over to Britain? What brought you here to us?
I've always wanted to gain some, study abroad experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just the right time. It's right, the opportunity. Actually, Bournemouth University find me.
How?
They came to our school, mm-hmm. and there is a education exposure? Exhibition, yeah.
That's the one. Yeah. Not an expedition. Right. Okay. So they came over to... Which university were you at?
I'm always very interested in radio thing.
Uh-huh.
And it's, to me, it's just like the last chance in my life path. Because if I put it later in my life, I don't know whether I can do it because there were so many. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
I was studying media management right then in Communication University of China.
Okay. And where is that university?
It's in Beijing.
Okay. And are you still there you going back to
Yeah, okay.
So what's the best thing you're going to take back with you from Bournemouth University?
Memory.
Mm.
And the courage to continue, to carry on. And I know that I put to me more confidence that I can carry on with me and to always push me forward, and that you can do something you never think you could do before.
Mm.
And I think that's the most brilliant things. And friends, I earn a lot of good friendships.
Because I have to say, you've done fabulously well so far by producing the features that you've produced.
I hope you're the teacher.
I'm afraid I'm not, but I have to say, among your course mates, we're all really proud of you to be doing what you do in a language that is foreign to you, with a different alphabet, and, you know, the fact that you produce such powerful, insightful
Thank
features.
You. I just get a lot of inspiration from you too, you all too there.
And one last thing, no fresh fish in a city by the sea. Have you found where to get your fish?
Well, in Asda, the big Asda near the train station, they sell dead one.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. Yeah.
We have a fish in our supermarket. They're swimming.
Oh, really?
And then when you pick up one, and then, I want this one, and then she will, you know,
kill it.
Yeah.
Chop it.
Like that.
Now, you see, that's quite an alien concept. I have to say, here in Britain, we're quite removed from the process of killing our food and eating it. We expect everything nicely packaged and done for us.
Yeah,
I guess in China, fresh means a heartbeat. Yeah?
It's not that human.
Well, I don't see why it's not humane. It makes no difference.
Better.
Yeah,
much
I guess.
Better.
Yeah, I guess so. So
the only way here, I have to, you know, get the fish myself.
Okay, well, Crystal, if you come to my house, I'm going to keep my goldfish out of your way, just in case.
No.
No, that's only a joke. That's only a joke. So what kind of fish do you eat in China?
Do you understand Chinese? I just know the name.
Okay,
fish,
tell us the
Chinese.
Name. Tell us the name. What is it?
Like li yu, ji yu, lian yu. A lot of yu means fish.
Okay.
So we put a word to describe what kind of category or things it belongs to. Then like lian yu, ji yu. Yeah.
Okay, and Japanese sushi, is raw fish a big thing in China as well?
I don't like that. I don't like raw fish.
Yeah, because that's become quite popular over here, raw fish. Yeah, it's in all the supermarkets now, isn't it? Sushi, and I think it's quite tasty.
I like it,
Okay, right. Right, so anyway, we're going to stay on the theme of cooking. Moving on to some practical cooking advice, especially for students. Without the help of mum and dad, it can be a struggle when you first get to uni. So Third Ear has come up with some recipes that all students will be able to do, and they're also very good for you. In the next half hour, we'll be playing you two recipes you can't live without. Marie takes us through our first one, Revision Crunch.
The ingredients that you'll need for this recipe are 3 years of illegible notes and a few indecipherable graphs for decoration. You may also like to include some highlighter pens and post-its, so these are optional and do depend on your taste. It's also good to include some junk food. In the past, I've found that crisps and fizzy drinks are best. If you're revising 12 hours before the exam, then do make sure you stock up on plenty of high-energy drinks. They really do make this dish extra tasty. You also need to make sure you include in your preparation time at least 2 hours for chilling. This should involve some watching Hollyoaks or perhaps Friends. This will only help you to remember all the things you're revising. First of all, do take the illegible lecture notes and a few library textbooks that have, very helpfully, already been highlighted for you by some previous students. Now, these books may contain some teacup stains and suspicious yellow smears, but don't worry, they're still good to use. Sprinkle this mixture with some hair pulling and eye rubbing. After time, you'll notice that the mixture begins to turn and nothing really makes sense anymore.
Now, don't worry, this is quite normal and there's absolutely nothing that can be done about it. Make sure you leave plenty of time as well to colour code your subjects, though you may realise that this is a monumental waste of time and it won't actually help you remember anything significant, it's certainly a lot prettier. Bake for half an hour until piping hot and very stressed, but make sure you don't overdo it and burn out. You need to allow for plenty of rest and cooling time. Please note that this recipe only works the night before your exams. Revising any time sooner will lead to an undercooked social life.
And that was written and produced by our very own Marie Horner. Now, again, if you have had experience of living in China, if you would like to email in and maybe give Crystal, you know, some moral support, email us on studio@burst.co.uk. And while we were on that feature, our technician Alan very kindly told us that the freshest fish you'll get round here, Crystal, is actually at Pool Quay. It's kind of not quite alive, but only very freshly dead, if you see what I mean. So
freshly dead.
We hope that's helpful to you. Okay, we are staying on food because we like our food here at Third Ear. And our fellow presenter Sarah here and regular Burst Boffin has been keeping her third ear close to the ground for news of, well, groundbreaking research. Sarah's here to tell us more. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Emma. I'm not entirely sure that it is groundbreaking research. It's not going to kind of set the world on fire.
Oh,
in that, you know, we've not discovered a cure for cancer. We haven't mapped the human genome.
Anything to do with food, Sarah, is very interesting to me and I take it very seriously.
Well, that's good. But no, we uncovered a bit of research in it's such an esteemed publication. I believe it's called The Sun.
Oh, yes, The Sun. It's usually my first port of call after Bella magazine and other such. I have to say, my local doctor, I'm going off food slightly, but my local doctor did actually tell me once that she gets all her new research in Bella and then she backs it up. So it's perfectly okay for you to start off with The Sun, but do tell us more.
We discovered a very interesting article that said that the average Briton can cook 10 recipes off by heart. Only 10, although I think it's a quite a nice round number for them to focus on.
I'm thinking,
you know,
even 10.
Yeah. What if it had been 9 or 11? You know, oh, let's just round it up or round it down. Let's stick one on the end there. I did a bit of, basically took a microphone into my kitchen flat. All my housemates went and hid, which is probably good for them. And decided to do a bit of research on the subject.
A recent survey by UK TV Food, although it's probably called something else by now, has discovered that the average Brit can make 10 meals from scratch without having to consult a recipe. Now, they defined a recipe as a main course dish with 4 or more ingredients, so sadly, cheesy beans on toast doesn't count. Spaghetti bolognese and chilli were by far the most popular and third popular dishes, which isn't surprising when you consider that all you have to do is cook some mince, throw in some veg, and then add some spaghetti or rice. The traditional British roast dinner came in at number 2 on the list, which isn't surprising, as once again, once you know what you're doing, it's pretty simple. However, the results seem to suggest that the more you cook something, the more you'll remember the recipe. The survey suggested that on average we cook 4 home-cooked meals a week, with only 16% of under-25s cooking daily, as opposed to 45% of those aged 65 and over. So does a hectic life of lectures, coursework and Facebook mean that we students are already meals and takeaways, or can we actually cook? I've come to the typical student kitchen, you know the kind, with a mountain of washing up on the sideboard and an overflowing bin, to find out whether the average student fares better than the average Brit when it comes to being able to cook meals from scratch. Now, all of my flatmates seems to have disappeared, which is probably a good thing, as I'm about to have a good nose through the fridge, freezer and the cupboards to see what's in them. So first up, it's the fridge, which, once you get past the mountain of alcohol in here, looks to be quite promising with bananas and apples on the top shelf. However, lower down, there's lots of processed meat and some cheese and onion pasties and pork pies. And on the bottom shelf, yep, student's friend, the pizza. So, are the freezers going to fare any better? No, not really. Loads of processed food and ready meals. However, there's also lots of frozen meat, chicken, mince. So meals could be made out of that. Oh, and yeah, some more pizza. Now, to try and rescue the situation, I'm going to see if I can cook Toad in the Hole, which came in 9th place in the survey, from scratch without looking at a recipe. I do own a cookbook, which I confess isn't very well used, but I reckon that I can manage this one from scratch.
Right, so I've got everything I need to make my Toad in the Hole. So I've got my sausages, my eggs, flour, milk, bowl to mix it all in, tray to cook it in, oil for the sausages. Gotta turn the oven on, that's very important. So I'm about to pour flour into the bowl. I'm doing this without the recipe, so I'm not 100% sure how much I need to use, but then I very rarely look at measurements. 4 and a bit scoops of flour. Looks about right. Now I'm going to crack the egg on the side of the bowl. No shell in batter mix. No yolk on fingers. Result. So I'm going to whisk that together a bit. I'm going to add my milk. Again, ignoring measurements, just kind of going by what looks right. Which is probably wrong, but never mind. Giving it a good stir. There we are, I've got a lovely, nice batter there for the Yorkshire pudding part of Toad in the Hole. All whisked up nicely, no lumps. I'm going to put that in the fridge and wait for the sausages to finish cooking. Right, the oven's ready, so I'm going to take my tray, bring the sausages in and stick it in. And leave that until the sausages are sizzling and there's a nice layer of fat in the bottom of the tray.
Now I'm going to get the sausages out of the oven and cover them in the batter mixture. Right, and I'm just going to leave that in the oven until the batter mixture has risen. Right, that looks nice and risen and all golden and brown. So I think it's about time that it comes out of the oven. So there we are, my Toad in the Hole is complete. I would like to say that I'll save some for my colleagues in the studio to try, but in truth, it's not going to last that long. So yeah, that was my Toad in the Hole.
Lovely, produced and presented by your good self, wasn't it, Sarah?
Yeah.
Right, Toad in the Hole. Sarah was last seen on a bus stuffing sausages and discarding the Toad in the Hole container. If you find it, if you could return it to studio@burst.co.uk, send us an email if you find the Toad in the Hole container there. Yeah, it's got M&S on the side. Right, okay. So how did it go then, Sarah? Was your Toad in the Hole successful?
Yeah, my Toad in the Hole was successful. Ironically, the gravy, where you literally just put the gravy granules and add hot water, was a complete and utter fail.
How do you make that go wrong?
I don't know.
How have you done that?
I don't know. I wish I could, because I've done gravy hundreds of times. And it just it kind of, for some reason, they separated.
Oh.
Whether one of my flatmates had been in at my gravy and decided to leave the top off so it had gone a bit yucky, I don't know. But yeah, I failed at making gravy.
Do you think it was it the pressure of the radio situation, knowing that the mics were on you? Was that what it was?
I didn't record me making the gravy, but was a complete and utter fail.
Oh,
yes.
Dear, never mind. Moving on. Okay, so what did you think then when you opened the fridge and you saw that processed rubbish?
I wasn't particularly shocked from watching my housemates over the year.
I'm the only one that generally tends to actually cook anything. The others just kind of bung stuff in the oven and, you know, let it cook for the 20 minutes, like the processed chicken and chips and processed fish and chips. And I'm the only one that I'll cook spaghetti bolognese, mince, toad in the hole. I did attempt a roast dinner.
And how did that go?
That went fine. I used to cook roast dinners for my old student halls when there were 14 of us on the floor. So I used to do a good roast chicken on a Sunday for a lot of the people on my floor. So I'm good at roasts.
It's sounding to me, Sarah, like you are actually the exception to the rule here. I'm actually wondering if your housemates could come up with 10 original recipes between them.
I think they possibly could, but say two of my housemates do the LPC, which is the course to become a solicitor, and it is very demanding, and both of them have got exams currently at the moment. So if I was in their situation, which I was for undergraduate because I did do a law degree, the last thing I think I'd want to do when I came home after a hard day of slogging it out in the library was stand and cook something. I'd just bung something in the oven.
But what I'm wondering is students live on a very low income, right? So,
yes.
You know, what's your food budget?
My food budget is about £20 a week.
Okay, so I'm thinking on £20 a week, how do they fill the fridge with all that processed food? How do they afford it?
A lot of the processed food, when I went through the fridge, had buy one, get one free stickers on it from the local supermarket that likes to encourage people to try something new today.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's often cheap, the processed stuff, unfortunately.
You see, I'm going to, like, come clean here. I'm a little bit of a phony student because I'm what they call a mature student. So I'm a very mature person. And I actually have two children and a husband and live in a nice house. And I cook nice food, okay? And I'm really old. And
you're not old.
Why, thank you. So I'm just thinking here, this is so different to like how I used to be when I was a student. I'm not telling you how old, but when I was a proper student, I used to get, you know, a big bag of lentils, being a vegetarian, and I'd get a few tins of chickpeas and I'd get some pasta. I always had pasta in, and I would just make food and we'd all share it. And now I'm actually wondering if students today, instead of sharing something they cooked, do they just get a load of 3-for-2s?
Yeah, we don't tend to share on my floor, which I do miss out. You know, that's something that I used to do when I was an undergrad. I used to cook for each other. But yeah, in my flat, we don't tend to do shared meals. I must apologise if you are hearing some slightly strange noises, but all this talking about food is making my stomach rumble horrendously.
Yeah, and I've been banging the mic with my pen, so yeah, do apologise for that. Right, okay then, so the consensus is that Sarah probably knows 20 recipes and her housemates know 10 between them. But anyway, I think we might have a little surprise up our sleeves for Sarah.
Well, I think we thought it was fair, assuming you have been cooking for a while and you did serve all your housemates in your undergrad, and it sounds like you are in a bit of a kitchen hell situation, that we would give you the opportunity. Don't you love that sound? Like, I don't know anyone else in the world who doesn't love the sound of crisp money.
I love the sound of money in the morning, even though it's 22 in the afternoon.
It's good. It's good for your soul, that sound. We've given you the opportunity to win £10 in Sarah's Saturday night takeaway appeal. Okay, we have 6 food-related questions. Let's see if you really do know 20 recipes. Let's see if you know your food. But to give you a fair old chance, we've pitted you up against 7-year-old Seb, who's Emma's son.
Yep, supplied by me.
Are you ready? Are you up for this? This is £10. Like, this isn't a fiver. This is £10 that we're giving you the opportunity to win, Sarah. It's a takeaway and a half. That's so, two naans,
and Sarah,
two naans.
We want you to try really hard, because if my son gets that £10, he'll go to the sweet shop and he'll spend it all on sweets. So we want you to do your best here to win that tenner.
I will. So is this effectively, am I smarter than a 7-year-old?
Yeah, but we didn't want to phrase it that way. We thought it might be a bit of a challenge, so you know, don't be offended.
Right, so let's kick off the quiz then.
You ready, Sarah?
Well, yeah, obviously I've started the music, so I have to be ready.
Question number one: what type of food is halloumi? therapy a few moments. What type of food is halloumi? Our seven-year-old friend Seb says...
It's a type of cheese, and you normally put it on kebabs.
Oh, a little bit of added information there, Sarah. Do you agree with Seb? What type of cheese is halloumi?
I do eat a fair amount of kebabs, but they tend to be of the doner variety. So I'm not entirely sure. I've never had cheese on a kebab. But the thing is, if I say cheese, does it look like I'm copying the seven-year-old?
Yep, absolutely, it does. What a dilemma.
But maybe Seb has it right.
Or does he have it right, or is he wrong? I'll copy the seven-year-old and say cheese, because I'm a coward.
The correct answer is cheese.
Yay!
1 point each to Seb and to Sarah. Now it's time for question number two. In cooking, what is a roux?
A roux?
Spelt R-O-U-X. Seb, what do you think?
I think it's a type of spice or something.
I'm just thinking of the pop band La Roux, who had that song.
Try and get that out of your
head. Going in for the kill. Oh, we're not allowed music. A roux. My mum's actually used to be a cook before she had to retire for health reasons, and she used to cook and she used to mention roux a lot. And I think is it sauce? Is it a type of sauce?
Okay, so Seb is saying spice, sauce. Sarah's saying sauce. Sauce is saying Sarah. Mm. The correct answer is sauce or gravy. So Yay. You're correct. So far, you'll be encouraged now. You are beating the seven-year-old.
Yay. In the quiz.
2 points. Yes.
Yeah, you just won't try in the quiz. Test.
Sarah, 2 points. Seb, one. Time for question number three. What type of fruit is a honeydew? And Seb says...
Another question I don't know, but I think... It's sort of golden thing, and golden colour around the outside, and then it tastes like honey when you bite it.
Seb sounds like he's ad-libbing somewhat.
Yes.
We'll forgive him, though. He's only seven. Sarah, what's your answer? What is a honeydew? What
honeydew
type of fruit?
Is a type of melon.
The correct answer is melon.
Yay! I'm going to get one deliberately wrong just to play our fantastic loser button.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Because I want to play that.
Well, it is time for question number four. What is the main ingredients in meringues? So we're looking for the main ingredients in meringues. Seb thinks the answer is...
Is it pepper?
Seb's amazing. Peppered meringues.
Peppered meringues. Oh, I love meringue. I do know the answer to this.
Sarah, what is the answer?
It's eggs, mainly egg white.
Oh, it's like an egghead giving additional information.
Which is ironic because I absolutely hate egg whites. They're horrible.
But egg yolks are okay.
Egg yolks are brilliant. They're the best part of the egg.
But out of two. The correct answer is eggs.
Yay. Oh, that's the wrong button. Never mind.
Right. Well, Sarah's on four, Seb is on one, and it's time for question number five.
Right button that time.
That's good. What country does coq au vin come from? Seb?
China.
Ah, now this explains why you had that file labelled that name on your hard drive, which I'm not going to repeat on air.
Well, you can't repeat it on air.
Coq au vin is from France.
The correct answer is en français.
Way.
He's just good.
Poor Seb. He is only seven. Let's cut Seb a little bit of slack. Okay, so the scores stand at Sarah 5, Seb 1. It's a bit of a losing competition, but still, we've got question number 6. What's the most popular drink in the world apart from water? Seb, what is your final answer to question 6?
Orange juice.
I think I love your son a little, Emma. He's lovely. Well, look, an orange juice. Sarah, what's your answer?
I'm going to say alcohol.
Alcohol?
Yes.
Just just a broad term as just alcohol. Well, alcohol. Not yeah. just in your world, Sarah. I mean in the whole of the world.
Well, the amount of students there are in the world has to count for something.
Okay. The correct answer is tea.
No. I suppose.
Disaster.
There's a lot of English in the world as well, aren't there?
Yeah, there are English tea. And in fact, Crystal's been giving us some very delicious green tea. I would strongly suggest green tea for nerves and for calming your tummy. Well, Sarah, you have won the competition. I do have to give you this £10. I'm a little bit miffed that I have to give it over, to be honest. I'd hope that I'd be able to help Seb and his
sweetie fund.
But I'll forgive him. I will. Don't worry, Emma, your dentist bill's not going to be too bad.
You can have a whip round later for Seb, don't worry.
Oh, bless him.
Money. That's tonight's takeaway.
Yeah, that is, that is. Treat yourself. Next, moving on to some more recipe advice for students. We've got the return of Third Ear's resident chef, which is me, and we're going through how to prepare after the night before.
Recipe 2, the day after the night before. Best served well chilled with an ice pack if available. This recipe is perfect to follow a heavy night, which has perhaps included a rather large bar tab or the mixing of beer and spirits. Though to ensure a successful result with this recipe, dry heaving must have been achieved. Now this dish is very simple in fact, there are very few ingredients, it's the method that you may find a little bit more tricky. Okay, so you've managed to pull yourself up off the bathroom floor, you now need to make sure you have thoroughly washed your grubby little face, especially if pan dries are an issue, girls. Firstly, to help combat furry teeth and white tongue, take an ordinary toothbrush and toothpaste. Simply give your teeth a good clean. This will stop everything you drink tasting like vomit and last night's kebab. Next, take a clean glass of water. Don't make the mistake of using a glass from the night before. This will cause your stomach to curdle due to your friend Tom insisting that vodka and raw egg make an exotic cocktail. Next, mix into the tentative water sipping some leftover takeaway food. Pizza is the safe option. If you like things a little spicier, stale doner meat and chili sauce is good, or perhaps a tikka masala with congealed oil. You need to make sure you add plenty of air into the mix. This will not only make you feel a lot more awake, it will help you rid your flat of that stale alcohol smell. Not very pleasant, especially if you have guests arriving for a dinner party, perhaps. Finally, to ensure the perfect finish to your hangover, sprinkle with daytime television and a few more hours of room spinning. Perfect every time.
Take your laptop into the toilet. Burst your imagination, not your bladder.
That was written and produced by Marie Horner. Although I have to say, the last thing I want when I've got a hangover is shouty people on Jeremy Kyle on daytime TV.
Oh, actually, that's a very good point. Perhaps something calmer. This morning, perhaps.
This morning with
the lovely Philip.
Phil and Fern.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Now, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. Not the moment
you
I'm
haven't.
Not been waiting for, yes. I'm going to find out what punishment my wicked co-hosts have in store for me.
Don't think of it as a punishment. This is more of a challenge, Sarah. It's not that we don't like you. We just think that we want to push you a little bit further in your life goals.
So it's an
we're helping
experiment.
You. Yes, we're doing a social experiment.
And we want to cleanse you.
Oh,
that sounds bad, doesn't it?
Oh my goodness!
Now you're really worried, aren't you?
Should I get
I don't
that?
Think I agree to that.
Should I get that tension music back?
Oh, I would.
I never agree to any cleansing at all. We've decided, Sarah. Now you are perhaps the most technologically dependent person I know. Tell us a bit about your reliance on technology, Sarah. What do you do first thing in the morning?
The first thing I do in the morning is switch on my DAB radio.
There we go. One.
Then I will probably switch my lovely Apple laptop on.
Two.
And check Facebook, Twitter, my email, my personal email account and my university email account.
This is all before breakfast. Oh, my goodness.
I don't do breakfast.
Oh, okay. Straight into technology. No time for food.
No time for food. And then I will constantly check my Facebook and Twitter throughout the day, and probably my email as well, because that's quite important, because the lecturers like to email us very important things across.
They're not listening, Sarah, it's all right.
And also, I do have a email address for another purpose, for another radio station, which I must admit gets sent rubbish on all the time. So I very rarely check that.
So you are a technologically advanced person.
I do have a very flashy mobile phone, which has disappeared.
It's confusing. To me, it looks like a mini computer.
It's a Nokia N95. It's one of those smartphones. And I've just discovered you can get the BBC iPlayer on it.
Okay. That is good.
Oh, and I do like watching telly as well. And I do like the iPlayer for missing stuff that I've...
So really, throughout your day, you've got regular pieces of technology that get you through your day. Yes?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't be able to survive without them.
Well, let's find out, shall we? Third Ear has decided to set you the challenge.
What challenge?
I have prepared a scroll. This is a legally binding document, Sarah.
I'm the lawyer, I'll be the judge of that.
This is the big reveal, by the way. Sarah is slightly sweating, and it's not
even hot
in here.
Do you want me to put you...
Yeah, go on. Sarah's weekend technology detox.
Detox? I don't like the sound of that word.
We've drawn up 10 golden rules that we are challenging you to follow this weekend to try and cleanse yourself, as Emma so eloquently put it, of technology. You ready? No. You kind of do have a bit of choice in the way that you... Well, no, you don't have any choice. I was going to try and give you some sort of, you know, leeway, but actually, Sarah, you have to do this for
you
the purposes
no
of
choice.
Third Ear. Rule one. Throughout this weekend, no internet is allowed.
No.
This includes accessing the web from your mobile phone, home, university, internet cafes, or anyone else, anywhere else on earth. No internet.
No.
No internet whatsoever. Rule two, no mobile phone. Get back to the good old days of the early 80s. Though in case of an emergency, please ensure that your parents and close friends have your housemate's mobile number and the landline number of your room. Well, we have set that up to make sure that you can be contactable in case of an emergency.
I am going home for the weekend, so they should be able to contact me.
Make sure, we don't want to upset mums. Mums rule the world.
Yes.
Rule number three, watching TV is strictly prohibited.
But it's a new series of Top Gear on Sunday night.
No.
You
will have to rely on the iPlayer. This means no DVDs or videos. Rule number four, no radio whatsoever. The only radio you are allowed to look at or listen to and contribute to is Third Ear or First on Monday.
Oh, what? So I'm not allowed to listen to the Week in Links?
No. But you should. It's good.
It's very good.
Rule number five, no MP3 players are permitted whatsoever. Though I will allow you a Discman or a cassette player. Get back to the 80s.
I have got those.
Okay.
But I've got a really long train journey.
I'm sorry, Sarah. I completely made the rules. But you do. You don't have to follow them. Rule number six, though emailing is obviously banned, do feel free to use snail mail. The Royal Mail is there for a reason, Sarah. If you want to write us a letter, feel free. You can. And you can also receive post. Rule number seven, you may only use a computer for university work or playing solitaire. We don't want you to suffer in your studies. That's not what we're about.
Okay.
Rule number eight, to avoid a mental breakdown, we suggest you buy a few books and magazines. In fact, I have got you some. A few crossword puzzles.
Please not Heat Magazine.
Oh. Rule number nine. Burst will not accept any responsibility for the loss of friends or social life that may occur from this experiment. Though you don't have much choice, please sign below if you agree to all of the above terms. And rule number 10, after signing this agreement, you have an hour to say goodbye to technology and update your Twitter and Facebook before the switch off. You better call your mum as well. You are now required by law, Sarah, to sign this document and please date it. It will be framed.
What, in the studio?
Yeah.
Right,
it's
so
up on the wall.
Let's try and get the mic to pick this up.
Okay, Sarah, we're now running out of time, but I am just... This is the sound of me taking Sarah's mobile phone off her, and a lovely little phone it is too. If you'd like to give Sarah your support, please do email us here at studio@burst.co.uk. If you're a friend of Sarah, could you please go on her Facebook account and give her some support? Send her a message. She will log on Monday's show. You could tweet her at twitter.com/shorsley, all one word. Please do send your support for Sarah. She needs to know that there are people out there who love her.
Not that I'll be able to actually see it. But
it'll be such a nice feeling, won't it, on Monday, to be able to log on to your Twitter, to your Facebook. Turn on your mobile phone. It's going to be fantastic. You're going to feel just a rush of love. And of course, on Monday from 1 o'clock, Third Ear will be back on Burst Live, revealing all how Sarah got on at the weekend, straight after the week in Lynx, which is definitely worth a listen from 12 as well. So we really hope you've enjoyed the last couple of hours. We're going to be saying goodbye to Sarah, who will be receiving mental support for the next 3 days. So please don't worry, we're not abandoning her. That's not the idea. We will be supporting her. And of course, we'd love to hear from you as well. So do email us at studio@burst.co.uk. Your presenters today were Emma Golby-Kirk and myself, Marie Horner. Your producers were Crystal Zhang and Sarah Horsley. Thank you.
You're listening to Burst, available online or online.